This is Marathon Training Academy, episode 227.
This podcast is brought to you by Generation UCAN, the revolutionary new way for runners to fuel. UCAN keeps your blood sugar stable and allows your body to burn fat. Generation UCAN, there's sugar and then there's science. Visit generationucan.com and use the promo code MTAMUNICH to save 15% off of your order. That's MTAMUNICH.
This podcast is brought to you by Virtue Labs. Virtue Labs is a new hair care brand with a vision to give everyone the best hair scientifically possible via an incredible new protein called alpha keratin 60KU. Alpha keratin was discovered 6 years ago by a group of bioscientists and has the ability to resurface and fill in cracks from damage, giving more bounce, shine, and strength to your hair. And now you can get it exclusively in Virtue Labs' line of shampoos, conditioners, and styling products. So just visit virtuelabs.com and use the code MTA to try Virtue at 10% off plus free shipping. That's virtuelabs.com and use the code MTA.
Welcome to the Marathon Training Academy podcast, where we inspire and empower you to go the distance. I'm Trevor.
And I'm Angie.
In this episode, we take you to the Munich Marathon in wonderful Munich, Germany, Wunderbar München, Deutschland. And in the quick tip, Angie explains how running surfaces can affect performance. And of course, to connect with our coaches and community and to train to go the distance, you can learn about Academy membership and our other resources for runners when you visit marathontrainingacademy.com. So Angie, what is going on? You are getting ready to leave tomorrow to go run a marathon in the great state of Maine, which I'm sure we'll be talking about on the podcast if you make it, right?
If I make it, what do you mean? You've little faith.
This will be a marathon, what, like number 50 for you?
Yeah, actually, it is number 50. I mean, counting my ultras and everything as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, exciting stuff going on. The Chicago Marathon was last Sunday.
Yeah, it was a very exciting year. Galen Rupp was the first place male finisher, and this kind of ends a drought for American-born winners. Actually, it's been 35 years since a man born in the United States has won the Chicago Marathon. He ran a personal best of 2:09:20, beating out some tough competition. The second place male was Abel Kirui of Kenya. He came in at 2:09:48. And third place was Bernard Kipyego of Kenya. And he came in at 2:10:23. So it wasn't anywhere near world records, but still a competitive race for the men. On the women's side, Tirunesh Dibaba was the first place with 2:18:31. So this is the first time that she's won a marathon, and she posted the second fastest women's time ever recorded in Chicago. In second place was Kenya's Brigid Kosgei. She had a massive new personal best of 2:20:22. And then third place was American Jordan Hassay. She ran 2:20:57 for third place in her second marathon. And this is the second fastest time ever recorded by an American woman on U.S. soil. So definitely a very impressive second marathon for her.
We ran the Chicago Marathon a couple years ago. It's a great race. Lots of crowd support. Pretty flat. Very exciting race to run. It's definitely a race that we enjoyed and would recommend anyone going to if you like big city marathons, for sure.
Yeah, that's right.
And we had some folks who are training with us in the academy, who were there in Chicago and ran, and also some other marathons this last weekend. So, Angie, what's the roundup?
Yeah, we've got some shout-outs to give to people. We'd like to say congratulations to Academy member Doug, who got a six-minute PR at the Chicago Marathon. And also congratulations to Alora from the Academy, who ran her first marathon in Chicago. And she posted in the Academy, "It's a wrap. Despite dealing with some GI issues and low back hip pain, I refused to let these issues ruin my experience. It was a gorgeous day in a beautiful city and a tour of 29 neighborhoods on my own 2 feet. No matter how slow, I was doing a marathon and I was going to make happy memories and take it all in and not brood over my time. At mile 22, I told myself to release the Kraken, and my final miles were my fastest."
Nice.
"I'm feeling super thankful for the experience and for Angie, Trevor, and my MTA peeps. I couldn't have done it without you all the last 2 years. You've been coaches, cheerleaders, and friends."
Well, congrats, Laura, on finishing strong and with lots of enthusiasm, it sounds like, too. I love it.
Yeah, I love her attitude about the race. We'd also like to say congratulations to Richard. He completed his first marathon at the St. George Marathon.
Which is a beautiful one, we've heard.
Yes, yes, it certainly is. And another Academy member, Benjamin, says, thanks to Angie and Trevor for keeping the great podcast episodes coming. Special thanks to Coach Lynn for helping me achieve a 26-minute improvement at the St. George Marathon.
Nice.
There are so many great races that I didn't plan on repeating one, but the St. George course is beautiful and such a well-run event. We'd also like to say congratulations to Academy member and friend of ours, Mark. He is from Pennsylvania here. He says, so after 18 marathons, I managed to get a 12-minute PR at the Wineglass Marathon. I'm still not fast, but at least I got the job done. Thanks so much to Angie and Trevor, and quite frankly, all of you for the support and encouragement.
Well, thank you, Mark, for your longtime support of the podcast. Angie, he was a coaching client of yours from way back in the day.
For many years.
And, you know, Mark, I honestly didn't believe you had what it took, but you proved me wrong.
So. What is this reverse psychology here?
Just kidding.
And this note comes from Jean-Pierre in the Academy. He says, good afternoon, MTA. I completed my first marathon in 4 hours and 29 minutes, the Rimouski Marathon. And actually, I'm not really quite sure where that is.
Or if we're saying it right.
Yes. So if we butchered that, sorry about that. He says, I am very proud. The second half of the race was particularly windy, and I had to reassess my race strategy. Having one thing in mind, finishing strong and healthy, and mission accomplished, I am now a marathoner. And I love my hard, humbling experience, and I'm looking forward to my next marathon. The podcast gave me a lot of knowledge on how to plan for this challenge. When the training and long runs got hard, it kept me focused, motivated, and confident because I have what it takes to run a marathon and change my life. Thank you, MTA.
Well, the training and long runs do get hard, as all of you know. So congrats, Jean-Pierre, on staying focused. And by the way, folks, after a quick Google search, we found out that the Rimouski Marathon is in Quebec.
That's right. This note comes from Kathleen. She says, today I redeemed myself from so many slow half marathon finishing times. I ran the New England half marathon and came away with everything I hoped for. I finished in 1 hour, 57 minutes, and 59 seconds, and 10th in my age group, which was my first time to break 2 hours in over 15 years. I followed advice to run hard, even when I didn't feel like there was anything left in the tank, and it paid off big time. I pushed hard, and I'm so excited to know I have more potential. Now that I've realized this, I know I can push through a marathon for a BQ. Thank you, and again, that's from Kathleen.
You know, an interesting concept is a redemption run. If you have some marathons or halves that don't go so well, plan for and train for a comeback, a redemption race.
That's right.
Does that make sense, Angie?
Yeah, definitely reassess, rest a bit, refocus yourself, and come back stronger. And it sounds like, you know, Kathleen persevered even through 15 years of not getting that half marathon PR that she wanted, and it definitely paid off for her.
Think about that, 15 years, that's longer than I've been a runner.
Yeah, me too, for the most part.
Yeah.
I mean, since I've been racing.
Yeah, so you have time on your side, folks, when it comes to running, fortunately.
That's right. As a runner, you can be thankful to get into a new age group. And this note comes from David in the Academy. He says, hi, Angie and Trevor. I recently completed the Twin Cities Marathon. I joined the Academy about a year ago, and prior to that, I listened to the podcast on my weekend long runs. I especially love the shout-outs that you give to fellow listeners and members. Long story short, my ultimate goal was to run a marathon in under 4 hours. 3 years, three marathons, and many setbacks later, I still had not achieved my goal. The build-up to this year's race was a real struggle because I was having a hard time staying motivated. Seeing and hearing the other MTA members' thoughts and listening to your podcast really kept me going. The start of the race was rainy and windy, and the final 10K was brutal and involved a long ascent from miles 20 to 23. Midway through the ascent, thoughts of doubt began to creep into my mind. That's when I thought of the well wishes from many of the MTA members and Angie in the days leading up to the marathon. I used those positive thoughts to push through the pain and keep going. I pushed myself to the brink and managed to finish in 3 hours, 58 minutes, and 44 seconds.
Nice. Well, that is great, David. Congrats on going sub 4. And that's another example of, you know, a number of years that it took to accomplish a goal that he had in his mind. So you got to be patient with it sometimes, you know?
Definitely. Congratulations, David, on working so hard and staying positive. This note comes from Alexandra in the Academy. She says, turns out I do have what it takes to run a marathon. My first marathon, and I've honestly never had a better race. My stomach felt great the whole time. I never had any pains, and I was able to keep a consistent pace for the first time ever. Thank you, Galloway Method. And I had a dance party the entire way with new friends that I met. Truly an experience I'll never forget.
Now that is a win.
That's right. She's doing something right.
Everything sounded like it went well. Even had enough energy to dance. Congrats, Alexandra, on completing your first 26.2.
That's right.
A lot of exciting races going on. Love to hear the emails that come back. Love to see just how folks are taking it up to the next level and they're running and just experiencing life to its fullest through marathon training and long-distance running. We're definitely here to support you folks any way we can. If you'd like to go deeper in your training, just reach out. We've got some coaching spots open right now. You know, if you want to work one-on-one with one of our fabulous, highly experienced coaches. But without further ado, we are going to get into our world-famous race recap. This time we're going to talk about the Munich Marathon in Munich, Germany.
Cue the annoying accordion music.
Angie just said under her breath, cue the annoying accordion music. Because she knows I'm going to put in German buffer music right now before we go into the next segment, right? I mean, you folks would only expect that, right? But let's go ahead and get into our race recap of the Munich Marathon right now.
Trevor, give us all the details about the Munich Marathon.
Yeah, well, I always wanted to go to Munich, Germany. As a lot of you folks know, we did the Berlin Marathon last year. We loved it. Angie and I both ran it. We got into the lottery. And so people were telling us about the Munich Marathon. And I've never been to Bavaria, southern Germany, so I wanted to go. But it was more of like an outgrowth of my love for learning and for travel and for beer. So when you combine all those things, languages, culture, travel, beer, and running, Munich Marathon just seemed like the perfect option, don't you think?
Well, when you put it like that, I guess so.
So I actually ran the marathon 5 days ago at the time of this recording, and I can still feel a little stiffness in my legs, just kind of a residual and a reminder of my time there. And when I think about the race now, being 5 days removed from it, it's kind of all a blur. So I'm not quite sure how this is going to come out. I mean, I got some notes here, but
maybe that was the jet lag that you suffered after you got home.
Isn't it amazing how early I've been getting up?
It is. I mean, you've been going to bed earlier than me, which is to say something, and getting up.
So I actually appreciate the soreness in my legs. I appreciate the suffering that was involved, you know, at the risk of sounding like a masochist, the suffering that a marathon puts you through. I'm getting to like it more and more. Now I kind of see why people keep doing races like yourself, Angie, you know, having done almost 50 races now, and why people keep pushing the limits, you know, to try to run faster or to train for an ultra, because the suffering almost becomes part of the fun.
The soreness is a gift that keeps on giving, right?
There's magic in the misery. You would never think it, you know, but the longer you do this, the more you realize that. So the 32nd Munich Marathon and half 10K and marathon relay took place on Sunday, October 8th, 2017. There were around 16 to 17,000 participants. And according to the race email I got today, people from 118 different countries, which is a new record for this race. And there were 1,200 volunteers for this race. And what's cool about this event is that it starts and finishes at the Olympia Park, which was constructed in 1972 for the Olympic Games. And Frank Shorter was the last American to win gold in the marathon distance. He won it that year in 1972. And we had Frank on the podcast last year. You can still get the episode in our feed. Just go back and search for episode 189. You've got to hear that episode. Frank is such an amazing guy. And it gives you a great backstory and context around the games that year and his dramatic run into the Olympic Stadium to win gold. Now, the race also hosts a costume run called Trockenlauf, where folks run in traditional dirndl and lederhosen.
Sounds like fun to run in leather shorts.
Lots of body glide.
So what was it like pre-race for you?
Well, I flew to Munich on the last day of Oktoberfest, which was actually 6 days before the marathon was going to start, because it's always been a dream of mine to go to, you know, the largest Oktoberfest in the world. And I got to stay with two very gracious German fans of the podcast, Andy and Francesca Link. Andy actually wrote us last year after he finished his first marathon, which was last year's Munich Marathon. And we gave him a shout out on the podcast.
Very cool.
He reminded me of that because I had totally forgotten. But he reached out and said, hey, if you're ever in Munich, let me know. So yeah, I stayed with them that first night. He picked me up at the airport. I flew all night, got in the morning. He picked me up, and then I sort of crashed in their spare bedroom for a few hours and tried to get caught up on my sleep because Germany is 7 hours ahead from the Eastern time zone here in the U.S., And then later that day, we went to the world famous Munich Oktoberfest, which they call Wiesen, which is, I guess, translate to like grass or lawn, because this is the area where they set up the Oktoberfest on this big grassy area. So maybe I should talk about Oktoberfest for a minute, because it was kind of a big part of my trip.
This may or may not be as important as the marathon.
So imagine a massive fair, like a county fair here in the U.S. with roller coasters, Ferris wheels, bumper cars, carousels, fun houses, haunted houses, carnival games, and lots of food and souvenir vendors. And then, of course, the most impressive thing about Oktoberfest is these massive beer tents that they set up. When you hear the word tent, don't think of like a canvas tent, because these things are made out of wood and glass, and they have, you know, floors and a ceiling and a kitchen and bathrooms, and they hold thousands of people, and there's a platform for the band. They have live music. But they set these up and tear them down every year, which seems kind of redundant. You know, I think you would just leave them up there. But of course, apparently that area in Munich is used for other things throughout the year. So they have to disassemble these tents. So we went, and of course, there's so much to see and do. And these tents fill up and it gets pretty crazy. There's a lot of people. Of course, Andy and Francisco were dressed up in the traditional Bavarian Dirndl and Lederhosen. I didn't have any of that, so I just went in my normal street clothes, which was fine. There's plenty of people like I was. We actually found a nice seat in an older part. It's called Eau de Wiesen, where it's more family-friendly and easier to get in some of the tents if you don't have a reservation. And we had some great beer and food. You know, what more is there to say? The beer is amazing. I had some Augustiner for the first time. And of course, I ordered some schnitzel. They have these massive pretzels, like, you know, bigger than one's head, which is kind of strange coming on the back of our last episode where we talked with Dr. Mark about, like, low-carb eating. I told you folks that I was going to throw all that out the window for at least a week while I was in Germany. So I had to do it. I had to, like, be the tourist and buy this massive pretzel, which turned out to be pretty dry. So I ate, like, like one arm of it.
Wow. That was
it. So as it got later, the tents began to fill up with revelers. And pretty soon you couldn't find a seat anywhere. And as you walk in these tents, some of them are more like party tents. People are standing on top of benches and they've got their beer glasses in their hands and they're shouting Prost and banging their glasses and toasting each other. And there's live music and there's people dancing and it's a riot. And in fact, I'll play you a little soundbite here.
Und jetzt sind wir da, der Hochzeitsmarsch. So, und jetzt gehen wir auf die Autobahn. Oberkreiner Style.
And of course, the only thing better than going to Oktoberfest is going to a second Oktoberfest the next day. So I said goodbye to Andy and Francesca for the time being, and I drove to Stuttgart, Germany. But in Stuttgart, I got to meet up with an old buddy who I haven't seen in 23 years, and we went to the Stuttgart Oktoberfest. More beer, more high-carb meals, more revelry, more cheers, more toasting. It was great. And then the next day, we went to, he lives close to the border of France. So we went down to Strasbourg because I wanted to say that I've been to France. He said, well, if you want to go to France, how about we just go to somewhere, you know, that's pretty neat. We'll go to Strasbourg. So we went down there. Amazing city. I wish I had more time to explore it. Interestingly, though, in this week preceding the marathon, I didn't really do any running except for, you know, maybe a mile.
You're probably walking around a lot, though.
I was. Yeah, every day I did walk, you know, several miles. And then I felt like I was able to get, for the most part, caught up on my sleep and kind of get my body in rhythm with time over there, which was, I think, also helpful for the marathon.
Yeah, that is very helpful. So what was the race expo like?
So I got back to Munich on Friday, and I found a hotel near the central train station. And on Saturday, I went to the race expo with Andy and Francesca. And the race expo is at Olympia Park, and the actual building it's in is called the Olympia Halle. Parking was easy to find, but once we got inside this big building, it was kind of hard figuring out where to go. We ended up walking around a bit, like going upstairs, going downstairs, trying to find where to pick up our packets.
It's artfully hidden somewhere, huh?
Yeah. I mean, we did a lot of walking Saturday. I mean, I probably walked 4 or 5 miles in total. And just like lots of race expos, you know, you come to expect to see a lot of the same things. And it's the same in Germany from my experience now with having run 2 marathons there. They have a lot of the, you know, vendors that are selling gear, stickers, shoes, clothes, supplements, metal display racks. Other races are there. And then there's like one or two booths that always seem like they're a little out of place, like selling LASIK surgery or something. Like, okay, I can maybe kind of see how that fits here.
But there are a couple differences with German marathons or expos.
Yeah, and based on my limited experience, but this is what I've been told kind of throughout Europe, you have to, if you do a race, you have to rent your timing chip, or you can buy your own and just bring your own timing chip to all these races. And just like the Berlin Marathon, the Munich Marathon didn't give you a race shirt thrown in to your registration. You have to buy that extra. So if I wanted to buy it, it was going to be like €35. So yeah, we wandered around the expo till we finally found where to do packet pickup. And it was nice having Andy with me because his English is very good, and he was able to translate those moments where I needed some help.
Yeah, that is awesome.
And after the expo, we drove to the downtown area in Munich, found a place to park, which is not easy, and went to the world famous Hofbräuhaus. And we're able to meet another MTA listener there, Lena from Austria, who got a table for us. And so we had some great food and beer. Actually, I'm the only person that ordered beer, I think. Everyone's like looking at me like, you're going to drink that before you run tomorrow? Like, oh, yeah. When am I ever going to be back here? But we had a great time talking about all things running. And I'll play you a little soundbite here from our meetup at the Hofbräu. It's Trevor here. We are at the world-famous Hofbräuhaus in Munich, Germany, having lunch, and I've got some running friends, some new friends here. Marathon is tomorrow, and everyone is getting excited for it. I got my friend Andy. He and his wife Francisca were kind enough to let me stay at their flat my first day and actually pick me up at the airport. I would have been lost without you guys and without your help. So Andy, take a minute, tell us where you grew up and how you got into running.
Okay. Hi, everyone. My name is Andy Lenk. I'm from Munich, but I was born in Regensburg, which is about an hour north of Munich. Former Roman castle, very beautiful town. If you ever happen to come to Bavaria, check it out. Running for me was more like conditioning, actually. So I did different other sports all my life. And about 2 or 3 years ago, I just talked to a couple of friends who did marathons, and that got me really interested. And I also found your podcast on the web, and that gave me the motivation to try it myself, and now I love it.
And tomorrow is marathon number 2.
Yes, marathon number 2.
Tell us about your first marathon real fast.
Well, my first marathon was also in Munich last year, and I finished with a 3:20 and something, 3:20:40, I guess, and was very happy about it because I was actually only aiming for a 3:30. And yeah, I started slow around the 3:30 time and was able to do a negative split. And
nice.
For me, it was really helpful. That was also a tip on your show, by the way, that it's psychologically, it's great to be passing other people at the end of a race instead of being passed. And that really helped me. And also friends were waving on the street after mile 20. So
yeah,
that was a nice boost also.
All right, so there you go, folks. Try to pass people and have some friends there to wave to you. It'll be a big help. I'm also here with Lena from Austria, and this is going to be, what, marathon number 13, right?
Yes, marathon number 13, yeah, so.
Okay, well, so where did you grow up, and how did you get into running?
So I grew up in Vienna, Austria, and I got into running after I stopped cycling. I was looking for an outlet, and it kind of stuck with me. And the first marathon was kind of like a bucket list item, where after I finished, I was like, I'm never going to do that ever again. Yeah. And here I am, number 13, so...
So I think that you are fully indoctrinated into marathon training now. So what are your goals for tomorrow?
So primary goal was actually to qualify for Boston, which I'm not sure I'm able to do because I've been sick and lots of work.
Which she has done before, I might add. She's qualified before, so you have what it takes.
I do hope so that I have what it takes tomorrow too, but I'll try to at least do like a 3:35-ish, so let's see how that goes.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure you're going to finish before I do because... I'm just going to run and walk and walk and run and take pictures and maybe get this thing out and talk some more. All right, so real quick, Lena, you've done 13 marathons. Do you have a favorite? You know, a lot of times people are looking for ideas. I know you've traveled a lot. You've been to the States quite a few times. So any marathon that, I know, maybe you like them all, but one that like stands out in your mind?
Yeah, my first one. But I think Angie's done that too, was the Phoenix Marathon, which was my first one, okay. Which is my absolute favorite marathon ever.
Really?
So, yes.
Wow.
So Phoenix is number one, definitely.
Okay, shout out to the Phoenix Marathon. Well, it's great to meet you guys, and good luck to everyone tomorrow at the Munich Marathon. So there you have it, folks. Straight from our meetup here at Hofbräu. I say it like an English guy, though, right? Hofbräu. Okay, wait. Let's hear Andy say it.
Hofbräuhaus.
Hofbräuhaus. Awesome. Thank you, guys.
So I did some more walking around Munich just to take in the sights. And then, like I said, I ended up doing a lot of walking on Saturday. But at least I did get into bed early. And the TV didn't work in my hotel room. And I was like too lazy to go downstairs and tell them. So I ended up not watching any TV, which probably meant I went to bed earlier.
Yeah. Side benefit. So what about race morning? How did that go?
So in the morning I got up, and thankfully the marathon doesn't start till 10 a.m.
Wow.
So I had plenty of time to sleep in, which I love. Every race ought to start at 10.
I don't know.
Since I was going to be running slower, I put myself in starting block E, which didn't actually start till 10:20.
Wow.
So I caught a train from the central train station to Olympia Park, where the marathon start is. And it took me a while to find the bag drop. And I was doing more and more walking, like fumbling around, going in the wrong direction.
Oh, my.
Trying to speak German to people, to ask for directions, to figure out where to drop my bag. Even though Andy probably clearly explained where it was. Somehow, it just like the next day, just it all went out the window. I finally managed to find my bag drop because I knew it was going to be cold after the race. So I wanted some layers to put on. Anyway, then I made it into my starting corral, Angie, with just seconds to spare.
Why am I not surprised?
So how would you feel about that sort of race start?
You'd be feeling my wrath at the point.
In fact, I got a soundbite here at race start. This is what I was hearing and what I was thinking. Okay. Bag check was harder to find than I thought, even though Andy told me yesterday right where it was. I've got 1 minute before my starting corral. Just enough time to jump into it. Angie would really hate being this late. I'm not really late. Just don't have any wiggle room. I want you guys to hear what this sounds like. Here's the countdown. So there were just lots of energy at the start line. They did a great job of pumping up the crowd, and they would always make announcements in both German and English. That was helpful. The starting line had this huge banner, and across it, it said Auf geht's, which is a Bavarian way of saying, come on, let's go. Usually, I think in the other parts of Germany, they say Los geht's, like let's go. But in Bavaria, it's Auf geht's. And I remember hearing Auf geht's quite a bit. Just throughout the course, spectators would say it. People on balconies would yell it at you, you know, in an encouraging way. Other runners would say it. So yeah, Auf geht's kept repeating throughout
the
race.
Cool.
And you know, I still have angst before the start of a marathon because it just feels like this tenseness builds up in my mind. I know I've talked about this before because I know I'm going to be putting myself through some misery. Does that happen to you, Angie, or not?
I usually just think about, I have all the anxiety leading up to all pre-race logistics. So I just feel all this anxiety about getting there on time, getting to the right spot.
Your biggest nightmare would be late.
Right, to be late or have some major catastrophe on race morning. Once I'm in the corral and I'm ready to start, I just, you know, the only thing I can control is put one foot in front of the other. And so There's nothing to be nervous about anymore. Now, times I've been trying to PR, and you feel more pressure to keep with your pace plan. But, you know, for majority of marathons where I'm just there to have the experience and go the distance, you know, I don't feel that much pressure anymore. Of course, I've done it a few times too, so.
Yeah. So we started right next to the Olympic Stadium, and you can see the Olympic Tower, which looks like this huge space needle piercing up into the sky. And I tried to really pay attention to my surroundings and read every sign that I could and just center my thoughts on, you know, positive things. So I got some sound bites that I took on my iPhone as I was running along. So I'll be pronouncing some, or trying to pronounce some names of streets and saying some words, so I apologize ahead of time to my German-speaking friends for my horrible mispronunciations of words. But around kilometer 4, I saw this sign, I think it was on a bus stop, and it was a saying, a German saying that I've seen before, but it kind of became my personal mantra for this race.
Okay, I'm about 4 kilometers, so everything is going good. But I know I'm going to get tired. There's a saying in German. I actually saw it on one of the bus stops. I don't know if this is exact. Ende gut ist alles gut. Basically, all's well that ends well. So, it's not going to go well every kilometer, you know, every mile. Because there's low spots in most races. But it's going to end well. That's my goal. Finish strong, you know? Super. She was cheering for me.
Around kilometer 5, we did a short out and back on Leopoldstrasse. The word Strasse means street. When you're on Leopoldstrasse, if you look down far enough, you can see the Victory Gate, which is the Siegestor. Tor means gate. And it's a famous landmark in Munich. And I knew that we'd be running through it. But I knew we wouldn't do that until like near the end. So in that quick moment where I could look down the street and see the gate, I thought about the long journey that I had ahead of me. And also thought about how cool it's going to be to run through that because I knew I'd be close to the end.
Yeah.
The weather was perfect for a marathon that day. It was a cool 11 degrees Celsius, which is about 52 Fahrenheit. It looked like it was going to rain all day, but it didn't. Except for like a little bit of mist at one point that didn't last very long. A little more sunlight would have been nice. I don't think I saw the sun the whole time I was in Germany.
Wow.
But here's a pro tip for you folks. It's always wise to dress in layers and take some throwaway clothes. Last thing you want is to be too cold or to be too warm, but have a bunch of clothes that you can't discard. And also another wise thing to do is to dress like it's going to be 20 degrees Fahrenheit warmer than it actually is.
Okay. Just clicked by 5 kilometer. Went by the first aid station. A little out and back. Das Wetter ist kalt, aber mein Körper ist warm. The weather's a little cold, but I'm nice and warm, so I already ditched my long sleeves. It's amazing how fast you warm up.
Around kilometer 8, we ran into the famous Englischer Garden, which takes you along this footpath. It's very quiet in there, very peaceful. Lots of trees that are in full autumn colors, grassy areas. But I'm glad we got to go through the Englischer Garden because I didn't get a chance to see it prior to the race. And I've had a lot of people tell me that I should go see it. But it was very quiet. There was not much crowd support. So it allowed me plenty of time to sort through the thoughts in my head. And I don't know why, but I had more moments of joy and gratitude during this race than I can ever remember in a marathon. I even got emotional a few times, and Angie could probably tell you, I'm not that much of an emotional guy. So I don't know why, but I just had these moments of just overwhelming joy to the point, at least at the end, where I had to hold back tears. I don't know, has that ever happened to you, Angie? Like, you just got so happy at a marathon, you just felt overwhelmed with joy.
I think when you're pushing your body, you know, to the extreme that you do during a marathon, or, you know, sometimes even a half marathon, and it just kind of thins that emotional reserve that you have. It's kind of like everything, you're more sensitive to things around you often, and to emotional feelings, maybe, you know, statements or signs that normally wouldn't even...
Yeah, you would just ignore.
You would just ignore. It's like, oh, wow, it has so much more significance. Or, you know, maybe a touching sight, or even thoughts that you think, you know, yourself. Like people who have supported you along the way, special people in your life, maybe just gratitude that you're able to run. And so I think something about endurance running really can help you tap into that emotional side of yourself for sure.
Well said, Angie. I mean, even a guy standing out there ringing a cowbell brought me immense happiness. Thank you, cowbell man. So I was able to share some of my thoughts going through the Englisher Garden. I'll play the next soundbite for you. Okay. Kilometer 9, und wir laufen auf dem schönen Weg durch Englischer Garten. We are running on this beautiful path through the English Garden. I look down at my watch and I'm going a little too fast for my current level of training and Oktoberfest revelry. So just got to back off a little bit. You know, it's important to be realistic about your time, so there's no need to burn out right now during the first half. And that's my bit of wisdom from kilometer 9. Okay, that's the melodious beep of kilometer 10 here at the Munich Marathon, right beside a little river. In the English Garden, all is good. On a summer day, this would be a nice place to come lay out a blanket with the family, you know? Actually, I think people lay out without clothes on somewhere in here. Not today, though. Hey, folks, guess what I just found? Das Batazima. I have yet to make it through a whole marathon without stopping to use the bathroom. I can almost hear the little German children pointing fingers at me and saying, "Du hast eine schwache Blase." So, weak bladder man signing out. Okay, kilometer 13. I still got 18 more miles to go, but it doesn't help to think about that. It really doesn't. Instead, I'm just going to focus on this mile, this kilometer. I might never pass through this way again. All the atoms of the universe have arranged themselves in a certain order. This particular order at this moment, the leaf that I just saw fall, will never fall to the earth again. And I was there to witness it. So when you're a long distance runner, there's a lot of lonely miles. You're just kind of by yourself. Even when there's people around, we're just all running our own race. No one's talking. We're getting closer now to some spectators. I can hear somebody ringing a bell. But the last couple kilometers, yeah, just very quiet, very serene. We say that the English Garden is about the same size, maybe a little bigger than Central Park in New York City. I'm just happy, you know? Ich freue mich. Happy to be here. Happy my wife let me come. So thank you, Angie, if you're listening. Also, just thankful for my new friends here in Germany. Thankful for all of you who tune into the podcast and inspire us. So, let's see if I can sustain my joy as the miles get longer. We'll check in with you in a few. Okay. Kilometer 15. Coming up on mile 10. Just going to
going to take a little walk break here and eat a little bit of Yucan from my peanut butter Yucan bar imported from America in my suitcase. Definitely feels like I've ran 10 miles, but ready to run some more. Got to keep filling the tank, you know, both metabolism tank and your enthusiasm tank. Thinking about positive mantras and things that you have to be happy for. Just ran over the Max Joseph Brücke bridge. See a steeple of a church or some building. A beautiful river. It's good to be alive.
Well, they had aid stations about every 3 to 4 kilometers, and they served water and iso, which is like a sports drink, and also bananas, which they had already peeled and broken into chunks.
I'm making a face here because I don't really like bananas on a normal day, but if they've been like tampered with,
yeah.
I just can't.
Well, they weren't like mushy. They look like good bananas, but I didn't take one either just because I have my own fueling down. I know it works for me, so I just want to stick to that, not risk introducing something new. So, of course, I fueled with Yucan, which we've been using for years and love it. For this race, I only used Yucan bars before. Well, I should say, first of all, I had a good breakfast around 8 o'clock in the morning. That's another great thing about a later race start. So I was able to have that on board. Then I took a Yucan bar maybe 20 minutes before the race started, peanut butter chocolate flavor.
Oh, yes.
And then I had one at mile 10, and I had one at mile 20, and I took water from the aid stations, and I carried a small handheld bottle, which I actually bought at the expo because I forgot mine from home. But yeah, big thanks to Generation Yucan for, first of all, making a great fueling source and also being a sponsor of this podcast. And we get questions all the time about fueling for the marathon, it seems, because it's such a big mystery and such a puzzle to get figured out in your training. In fact, we just got this email from Nikki, who, Angie, you talked to about trying out Yucan at her marathon.
Yeah, we have a contact page on our website, and people often send in questions or comments. And Nikki wrote into us and said, I'm fairly new to running. Last year, I completed my first half. This summer, I did my second half, and I'm training for my first marathon in October. My biggest concern is controlling my irritable bowel syndrome and fueling during the race. I've experienced several runner's gut and runner's trots during my training runs,
yikes,
and I'm really trying to avoid that for the marathon. I find that the sports drinks offered at races only make it worse, but I also don't want to run out of fuel 15 miles in. And so I wrote back to her and suggested Generation Yucan, and we recently heard this back from her. She says, Angie, thank you so much for emailing me back. I took your suggestion and bought a sample pack from Generation Yucan a few weeks ago, and the results have been amazing. I took the drink mix on my 20-mile long run and felt great. I also experimented with the snack bars on an 18-mile and 13-mile long run and didn't have any stomach upset. On Saturday, I successfully completed my first marathon at the St. George Marathon without any stomach issues. And the best part is that I hit all of my goals. And she goes on to say thank you for the podcast and how it's helped her in her running journey. But I thought that was so exciting that she was able, as a new marathoner, to use Generation Yucan and have such great results.
And the folks at Yucan have put together a nice discount code for you guys. You can use the code MTAMunich, because this is the Munich recap, to save 15% off. So after we left the Englischer Garden, we crossed the river and turned down a street which had a lot of nice houses and foreign consulates. And I remember thinking how there was just kind of a lot of lonely stretches on this race. You really had to keep yourself going. There's a lot of sections where there wasn't a lot of crowd support. The weather might have kept a lot of people inside, but here and there people were standing on their balconies or in their windows waving down to us, shouting, Auf geht's! So here I am running along the street after leaving the Englischer Garden. I'll play a soundbite for you. Okay, mile 11. I'm going to buy a beautiful row of houses. It's definitely a beautiful city. Huge. So much to see. You know, I could spend months here. Love to come back sometime. Just ran by another water stop where they had water, bananen,
the Esol sports drink. Haven't tried it though. Just doing my best. Kilometer 18. Kilometer 18. Systems check. Energy is good. Legs. Okay. Just ran by a pirate. I think he's French. He said, merci. I keep remembering back to our interview with Jonathan Beverly. He talked about running tall. It was so helpful. So I've been trying to remember to run tall. And the more tired you get, your shoulders start to stoop. And you kind of start to bend at the waist. So, arms relaxed. Elbows back. Shoulders back. Hips forward. Small, light turnover. It's a little checklist that I run through when I run. And I just said the word run twice. Three times.
I passed the halfway point in the race, which is also the starting point for the half marathon. Now, the half marathoners didn't start until 1:30, and I actually saw Francesca standing on the side of the street among all the spectators, and she called my name, and I turned, and I was amazed that she found me.
Wow, that is pretty cool.
And she started the half marathon after that and finished in 2 hours and 14 minutes, which was her first half marathon.
Congratulations. That's awesome.
Yeah, this is where it gets real.
All right, just crossed the halfway point. Now the real race begins for us marathoners doing the full. And amazingly, I just saw Francesca and she spotted me. She's standing on the side. I was amazed. I'm running here with my Russian friends. Say hello.
Hello. Добрый день.
They're doing their first marathon today. Looking good.
Very good.
Running strong.
What is your name?
Trevor.
Trevor. My name is Alexei.
Alex.
Alex, yes. Nice to meet you, too.
Wie heißen Sie?
Dilbar.
Dilbar. Oh, yes. Beautiful, beautiful name. Dilbar. I've never been to Russia. Where's a good place to visit?
Oh, many good places.
Yeah.
Must have Moscow and St. Petersburg and Siberia, of course.
Really?
Yes, yes, it's a very beautiful place.
I bet. How do you say good luck in Russia? Russian?
Желаю удачи.
Желаю удачи.
Yes. Yes.
Good luck. Viel Glück. Желаю удачи. Okay. Hello, Leute. Ich heiße Trevor. In case you forgot who I was. I just passed kilometer 24. Via Unsvansek. And my little toe, the nail is digging into the toe next to it. Anyway, something is always bound to go a little sideways. Just running along here. Got a text from Angie. Said she was thinking about me, which I appreciate.
Nein, danke.
Auf geht's.
All right, just passed kilometer number 30. Legs are definitely feeling, tight. And I know it's going to get worse, but I'm not going to dwell on that because there's no point to it. Just got to grind it out. That's all it takes, folks, just grind it out.
Around kilometer 32, it got more interesting as we approached the heart of downtown Munich. And Angie, it's weird to have like throngs and throngs of people out there, but they're out there to see other stuff, not a bunch of sweaty runners. So you're running through all these crowds, but they're there to look at the buildings.
Right.
And they're kind of like looking at you a little strange.
My running is so epic. That music spontaneously bursts out wherever I go.
Yeah, Munich is, of course, a huge tourist destination. And we were running right through the heart of it, through the Marienplatz, which is the central square, the most unmistakable feature and building in that area is the Rathaus, which is their town hall, and it has the Glockenspiel, which is a massive tourist attraction. It's this clock and these little characters that go around and spin. It was fun to be there and to see all the crowds and, of course, such a famous landmark. All right, folks, I'm around 19 and a half miles, according to my watch. I wish you could see what I'm seeing right now. Just downtown Munich, just old historic buildings, ornately decorated, narrow street shops, tourist cafes, umbrellas, pubs, restaurants, beer signs. So they cordoned off the middle path for the runners. Uh-oh, five-hour guy just, pacer just ran by me. It's all right. I've been walking and taking photos, and now we're merging right onto Marienplatz. We were just here last night, and it was mobbed with people.
Soll jemand bei dir stabile Seiten machen?
Yeah, so cool. Well, folks, my phone is about to die. Really, really in a cool section right now, downtown Munich. Approaching the Victory Gate. It's got three archways. We're gonna run right through it. I am right now on Ludwigstrasse, close to where I think Hitler was arrested for the beer hall push, trying to take over the government in the 1920s. I am definitely walking right now. I got less than 6 miles to go. So I just want to feel strong, feel healthy when I finish, and try to enjoy these last 6 miles. Thanks again for being on this journey with me. When I saw the Victory Gate, I don't know if you guys remember, I saw it for the first time around kilometer 5. So I knew that I was close to being done. But what I didn't realize is that gate is just there to tease you at first, because before you run through the gate, you got to turn left and do an out and back, like a 4 kilometer out and back.
Oh, end of the race out and backs are always tough.
Yeah. But between kilometer 37 and 38, we turned onto the Franz Josef Strasse and we ran back toward the Olympic Park. So you kind of backtrack, go over the same road that you did leaving the park. And at this point, it was hard to keep myself running. I knew the 5 hour pacing group had passed me, even though my watch told me that I was on track to run sub 5. So I don't know what those guys were doing. They were just really excited. But something cool that happened during these lighter kilometers is the elite half marathoners started passing me. A little while later, like the 130 half marathoners and the sub 130 half marathoners were running by. So it was really cool to see all these people who looked fast around me and who had fresh legs.
Yeah.
At this point, I was definitely counting down the kilometers, and there was these, you know, mental battles that I was fighting, and this always happens near the end of a marathon. One thing I was thinking of is, you know, why am I here? Why did I travel to Germany by myself? You know, last time I went there, I was with you, Angie, and I kind of felt, you know, why did I leave my wife and my kids 4,000 miles away to come and do this? What is the point of it all? Can I run the last kilometer without stopping? Am I really going to make it under 5 hours? And just all this doubt kind of creeps in. Has that ever happened to you at the end of a race? You just sort of have these mental battles that you fight?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty common phenomenon. You tend to question a lot of things in your life, including your life plan, your race plan, and whether your legs are going to hold out for the final few miles or kilometers.
Super. She was cheering for me.
Keep the earth below my feet. From
I could do this all day.
My blood runs weak. Let me learn from where I have been. Keep my
And as we approached the Olympia Stadium, the crowds were getting bigger and the energy level began to climb, and people were saying, Auf geht's! Then we ran through the tunnel into the Olympic Stadium, and at that point, you know, I'm just within striking distance of the finish line. I could hear the crowds, I could hear the music, the announcers inside announcing the people crossing the finish line. And this is where I started to get emotional. And I think the last time I got emotional at the end of a marathon was the first time I ran sub-4, which was back in 2013. But in that moment, I thought about Frank Shorter running into the Olympic Stadium. I also thought about how lucky I was to travel 4,000 miles to Germany and all the new friends that I had made and all the, you know, and the old friend that I had connected with. I also thought about how lucky I was to be able to run 42 kilometers on my own 2 feet.
I'm glad you didn't borrow someone else's feet.
Under my own power. I mean, how many people do that? Like less than 1%. So yeah, I don't know what it was, just hyper awareness of everything I had to be thankful for and just the relief of making it to the finish line that just had me just overwhelmed with joy.
I haven't felt this emotional at the end of a marathon in a long, long time. I don't know why. I don't really cry easy. Maybe it's because I'm here in Germany. Such a long way to go and a long way to run. Finishing in the Olympic Stadium, so much energy. I'm thinking about when Frank Shorter ran in here, 1972. Think about all the champions that have run in here. I don't know, it feels good. Oh, I'm gonna go find some food and beer and my friends. Marathon number 14 in the books. Feeling good. Finished in less than 5 hours, which is what my goal was. I don't even feel like sitting down, which is different than on hot days. It's all good. I don't even remember the hard parts now. You guys are awesome. Keep taking action. Keep running strong. And remember, you always have what it takes.
Keep the earth below my feet. For all my sweat, my blood runs weak. Let me learn from where I have been. Keep my eyes to serve.
So it sounds like you finished strong and feeling thankful.
Yeah, that's right. Like the mantra that I had in the beginning, the end was good, so it's all good. Not every kilometer was pleasant, but crossing that finish line was just an epic moment, like every time you finish a marathon. Got my medal, then I staggered off to find some food and locate my gear. They were serving alcohol-free beer, and they had like these little loaves of bread and bananas and cake. So not the best race post-race bread. But my official time was 4 hours, 58 minutes, and 1 second. So definitely not my fastest, but glad I made it under 5 hours. Now, my friend Andy, on the other hand, my German host, he's got quite a gift because he finished in the top 500 with a time of 3 hours, 22 minutes, and 51 seconds.
Congratulations, Andy. That's awesome.
That's right.
Must have been skipping the beer the day before the marathon.
Must have been that. It's everything that I've taught him, Angie.
Yeah, right. He looks at you and sees what not to do. And the medal was really cool.
Yeah, the medal is in the shape of an Oktoberfest heart, which is what you can buy, like a gingerbread heart when you're over there. So later that night, I had a nice dinner at Andy and Francesca's place with some of their friends. And then the next day, I caught an airplane, a Flugzeug, back to America. So to wrap up this race recap, I definitely recommend the Munich Marathon for anybody who wants to experience a beautiful city and have the opportunity to run through it. And I think I would like to finish up by giving some thanks here on this podcast.
Sounds very appropriate.
So some special thank yous. Here it goes. Thanks to my lovely wife, Angie, for letting me go to Germany.
Me?
Holding down the fort here with 3 boys and all the soccer games and soccer practice, and sure was not easy.
You're welcome.
Shout out to Angie, my wife. Thanks to my gracious German host, Andy and Francesca, for letting me stay at their place and showed me a good time while I was in Bavaria. Thanks to the race organizers and volunteers at the Munich Marathon for putting on such a great event. Don't know if any of them are listening, but thanks anyways. Thanks to the German people for inventing Oktoberfest.
Such a gift to the world.
Thank you, Bavarian breweries. I'm thinking of you, Hofbräu and Augustiner, for all that you do. And finally, thank you to all the amazing MTA listeners for tuning in to the podcast and letting me take you on this marathon journey.
Well, now it's time for the quick tip, but before we do, we would like to thank our podcast sponsor, Sunbasket. You've heard us talk about Sunbasket before on the podcast, and Sunbasket makes it way easier and more convenient to commit to your health and wellness through making great meals at home. They send organic and sustainable ingredients directly to your door, and each Sunbasket meal comes with pre-measured ingredients and easy-to-follow directions, so you can cook delicious, seasonal, nutritious meals in your own kitchen in around 30 minutes or less. So it decreases the amount of excuses to eat at home on busy nights. And you can choose from paleo, lean and clean, gluten-free, vegetarian, and the family option. It's created by an award-winning chef and approved by nutritionists. So if you're interested in cooking and eating healthier, you can go to sunbasket.com/marathon to get $35 off your first order. That's sunbasket.com/marathon for $35 off. sunbasket.com/marathon.
Well, now it's time for this episode's quick tip, and Angie wants to explain how running surfaces can affect your body.
That's right. I actually got an email question from a listener named Deb, and she says, could you talk about running surfaces and how they may affect the runner? Concrete, asphalt, trail, etc. A lady in my CrossFit class says she runs the road because the sidewalk is too hard.
But the sidewalk and the road both seem hard to me. Is there a difference?
Yes, there is. And so we're going to talk about the different types of running surfaces, some that people may have never thought of before, and they do affect your body in different ways. And so I think having an awareness of the different types can, you know, maybe make you a more well-rounded runner, or at least a little more educated on what running surfaces there are out there. And the first one is concrete or cement. So sidewalks, by and large, are made of concrete, and they're usually very convenient and safer than the roads, often in cities. And in some places, it's actually against the law to run on the road if there's a sidewalk available. So it's important to know your local laws. But concrete is the toughest surface on your muscles and joints, particularly your knees and ankles. Concrete is 10 times harder than asphalt. So, you know, if you do run on concrete sidewalks, be aware that it is putting extra impact on your body.
Yeah, if your joints are hurting and you can remember that, hey, I've been running a lot more on concrete, like on sidewalks or whatever, than I have in the past, because maybe you're used to training on gravel or training on a different kind of surface, that could be the cause.
That's right. And, you know, often on concrete or sidewalks, you have to be aware of other pedestrians on the sidewalk, you know, maybe curbs, street lights, you know, there's some stop and go, making sure you're not running into anything on sidewalks. So there's a lot of awareness you have to bring to running on concrete. The second surface is asphalt. Now, this is a mixture of gravel, tar, and crushed rock. And most roads are made of this, and most road races, of course, are run on asphalt. So it is a very big training surface for most of us. Asphalt has more give than concrete, but it's still a really stable surface. Of course, when you're road running, it does come with the hazards of usually a cambered shoulder. So, you know, that's when the road slopes down on one side or the other. And if you run for long periods of time and don't change that up, often it can kind of throw off your body a little bit because one leg is longer, one leg is shorter. And of course, when you're running on the road, there are things like potholes and the need to be aware of traffic and be visible and things like that. But, you know, I know most people who listen to this podcast probably do, you know, a significant portion of their running on asphalt, as I do. And there's also the third type is cobblestones or brick. Now, this is a surface that you typically only see on really old roads and streets, maybe in cities that are, you know, several hundred years old. And this is one of the most tricky surfaces. If you've ever been running before and come to a section of cobblestones or bricks, it's like, whoa. It's just a little bit uneven. It has the hardness of concrete, but it does require that extra attention to your foot placement. I don't really find it very pleasant to run on cobblestones.
No, me neither.
Personally. And then there's gravel or cinders. This is what older tracks used to be made of. And these are easier on the body when they're well-maintained. But they're not an all-weather surface, and so the stability of your footing may vary depending on how wet the area gets. Also, with gravel, the size of rocks on the surface makes a difference in how comfortable they are to run on. Large rocks increase the amount of stabilization the body has to do, and it may be tough for people who deal with ankle issues. So if anyone's ever run on gravel, which had large rocks on it, you know how destabilizing that can feel. You know, there's kind of that twisting of your ankles. Next is dirt trails, and this is one of the gentlest surfaces on the body. However, people who have run trails will know that trails can vary widely in their condition, and their incline can be, you know, really steep. Some can be flat. Often there's uneven spots. They can be muddy, impassable sometimes of the year, and have unaccounted hazards like rocks, downed trees, branches, pine cones, roots, you know, things like that. So you really have to pay a lot of attention, and it can kind of make trails notorious for ankle sprains if you're not building up gradually to running trails and if you're not paying attention. I know I've taken some good falls on trails before, even though I still really enjoy them.
Yeah, I did actually most of my training for this marathon on the Appalachian Trail near our house.
Yeah, it's got some great sections. Another surface is wood chips or peat. Now, this surface is very gentle on the body, but can be mixed in quality. So if it's well-maintained, these trails are wonderful and can be very gentle and soft. But if the surfaces get wet or boggy, they may be slippery. So you have to kind of watch out on that type of surface. The next one is sand. This surface really fires up your stability muscles that may not get used very often, and it's great for barefoot running. But if you've ever run on sand before, depending on the type of sand, it can be very uneven and unstable, and it often puts extra pressure on your knees, Achilles tendons, calves, ankles, and hips. So if you have a hard packed sand, it's easier to run on. But if it's loose sand, sometimes you feel like you're running in place a little bit. So it's best to start gradually with low miles and slowly work up to longer distances on sand. And if you're going to be running a race that has a significant portion of sand, make sure you practice that in advance, because it does have a totally different feel to it.
When Angie runs on sand, she goes full ninja, doesn't even leave a single footprint.
Haha, I wish. Next, on to grass. This is obviously one of the softest and most natural surfaces, and it can be good for runners who deal with impact-type issues like hip bursitis and iliotibial band syndrome. However, grass can easily hide dangerous obstacles such as holes, roots, rocks, and you can easily run into things like ticks, dog poop, and it can aggravate allergies if you're running through grass. But, you know, if you can find a nice, fairly even, flat, grassy surface like maybe a golf course or, you know, grass straightaway, it can be nice just to hop off a harder path and run on the grass a little bit.
I don't know if I trust it. I mean, I've been on grass plenty of times where you couldn't even see, but there, boom, there's a gopher hole. Foot goes into there.
You have to be careful. You have to be very aware when you run on natural surfaces, for sure. The next surface is synthetic track. So this is a soft and sturdy surface, which has a bit of bounce to it, making it very easy on the muscles and joints. And it can be an ideal surface for someone who is slowly building back after an injury. Of course, the continual turns on a track can be hard for people who deal with calf or iliotibial band issues. And of course, it can be a bit boring if you're trying to log multiple miles. So there are definitely pros and cons to training on the track. A lot of people do their speed work on them as a way to accurately measure the distance and, you know, to have a bit of a softer surface. So throwing in some track work can be great for your training. Another surface is the treadmill, of course. Now the belt is cushioned and that reduces lower body impact. But of course, treadmill running can also be monotonous. And it can be challenging to transition to road races if you just do a lot of treadmill running, because the belt helps propel you forward, and also the impact is different between the treadmill and the road. You know, so it's important, like we always say, to train for the surface that you'll be running on. But of course, the treadmill is very handy and convenient because you can run in all kinds of weather on it fairly safely. And, you know, you can listen to music, podcast, watch TV, and do a number of things to take your mind off the fact that you are running in place, basically. And finally, snow is another surface. In many parts of the world, running surfaces can be covered with snow part of the year. And snow really forces you to slow down and have more awareness of your footing and environment. And personally, I think it's fun to run through fresh snow, but there are hazards, which include narrowed roads. If they have plowed, you know, there's not as much surface area on the road to run on. Traffic is often less predictable because the cars may be sliding around a bit. Then, of course, once the snow melts a little bit, it can get slick, icy surfaces. It can, you know, there's slush and everything. Plus, snow can hide curbs, potholes, and other hazards. So, you know, if you're going to be doing snow running, make sure that you have shoes with good traction and that you're paying attention to where you're stepping.
But what is the bottom line, Angie? Why is it important to know how the surfaces affect your body? And is it wise to vary your surfaces?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think most of us runners are creatures of habit, and so we tend to run the same routes on the same surfaces week after week, unless we're really being intentional about it. And depending on the type of surface that you run on and the type of mileage you're doing the same thing over and over again may result in overuse injuries and muscle stagnation. Interestingly enough, though, large studies haven't yet shown a connection between running injuries and whether you routinely run on soft or hard surfaces. So they can't really prove that running on softer surfaces decreases the rate of injuries. But as we run, the muscles and tendons act as a shock absorber as your foot lands, and then they release that energy during the push-off phase of running. So the surface you run on and your running shoes, or lack thereof if you're a barefoot runner, also function to absorb and release energy during the running stride. And I thought it was really cool to know that the body takes in the information from your previous foot strikes and adjusts your muscle contraction before the next time your foot hits the ground. And also, your body pre-tunes the muscles before your first step onto a new surface. So if you go from running on the road and hop onto the grass, before you even step on the grass, your body has already tuned your muscle for the right amount of impact for that new step.
That's interesting.
That's really cool to think about. So changing up your running surface every so often can challenge your muscles in a new way and also add novelty to your running routine. Softer surfaces like grass, dirt, trails, and gravel can reduce that force of impact with your running stride and may allow you to recover more quickly from the workout. Plus, these softer surfaces require you to use those stabilizing muscles that we talked about that may grow lax if you just run on the road or sidewalk all the time. And of course, you want to train primarily on the type of surface and for the conditions that you'll be racing on. But even doing one run per week on a different surface can be very beneficial.
Okay, so there's a look at how running surfaces can affect your body. We'll have that posted up on our blog. Also, the show notes to this episode and pictures from the Munich Marathon and other helpful links you can find over there, marathontrainingacademy.com. Thanks, folks, once again for being listeners to the podcast. We hope that you find it valuable, and wherever you are on your running journey, we've got your back. Remember, you are stronger than you think you are. You can get through this and reach whatever running goal you have set for yourself. Of course, we always love hearing from you. We have a contact form on our website, and you can connect with us on Facebook and Instagram at Marathon Academy. Until next time, folks, keep taking action toward your goals, and remember, you have what it takes to run a marathon and change your life.
Well on my way, well on my way. Oh, wait.